Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 336.
This week on the podcast, an impeachment diet of milk and candy is no match for 85-year-old sleepy people in a Senate marathon trial.
And John Bolton's unreleased book is already old news.
Plus, is Elizabeth Warren the new establishment candidate?
And no, Hillary Clinton, America does not want your authentic and unvarnished views.
Latest polls prove that we live in a post-poll world.
And Donald Trump has the best numbers. So much so that they definitely prove he's the second coming.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Yeah.
You can also follow us on social at, at BrainTrustLive.
That's right.
It's just like
And you're going to want to do that before this weekend.
That's right.
Before Friday. I mean, just do it now, like while you're thinking of it.
That's right.
Just, you're on your phone.
Right. You're listening to a podcast on your phone right now.
There's. Well, we're going to be in Iowa.
Yeah, we're going to be live coveraging on various platforms. A very exciting trip to Iowa for the caucuses.
Yeah.
We're going to go to candidate events. We're going to try to break into a caucus site. I mean, we're going to do all the things that you might do if you were footloose and fancy free in the middle of the most exciting election event of the season. And we're doing all of that mostly just to put it on social media. So
it's a social media trip.
It's a social media trip. So we are going to cover it wall to wall.
That's right.
And so make sure to follow us. We're going to be on, we're on Instagram at Brain Trust Live. We're on Twitter at Brain Trust Live. We're on Facebook at Brain Trust Live. We are on everywhere at Brain Trust Live.
Yeah.
And that's where you'll find us. And we are leaving on Thursday.
I'm so excited.
I'm so excited too. I know. I was saying to somebody earlier today, I was like, I never thought I'd be this excited to go to Iowa for a second time.
I was about to say twice in 1 year. What?
It's really, I mean,
I know.
This has been a bizarre calendar year in terms of travel, as I have not taken any, like, I haven't gone on like any exciting international adventures, but not a single vacation, but I have been to Iowa twice.
Right, twice now. Yeah,
yeah.
I know.
But it's going
to
be worth it.
I think we might go to Nevada too, because why not, right?
We're right here.
Just drive over there.
Yeah, we're not too busy to go to Nevada.
Yeah, so this might be. This might be the place to get your caucus news.
That's so true. That's so true. And before we get into the caucus excitement, we have to address the elephant in the room, which is that the Senate impeachment trial is going on.
I know. It's one of those things where it's like, it's so, you want to deeply care about it.
That's right. I wanted.
And the reason that you wanted to deeply care about it is because you wanted to deeply care that the senators care about it.
That's right.
And that is where the disconnect, I think, for me is happening.
So true.
It's sort of one of those kind of like if a tree falls into forest situations.
Right,
and I hate that. Like,
it doesn't matter what is said, though.
Right.
Whatever is said, even if it's the most brilliant oratory we've ever heard. And as we've established on this podcast, Brent loves good oratory. So he's like
game
for
a speech.
Long speech.
And I texted you a few times over the 3 days that the House Democrats were presenting their case saying that someone was doing a vaguely good job.
Sure.
I was like, oh, look, it's Val Demings. She sounds like a smart person on my radio right now.
Yeah.
Most of this was happening in my car. that's when I was NPR was playing it. So it's like, okay, I'll listen to that.
Well, I mean, these were long hearings, you guys.
And I don't mean to imply that, like, they're unimportant because I don't think that they are. And I think the reason I just got into a debate with someone about this yesterday, the reason why these are important is not necessarily for the senators aren't going to budge.
Right.
You know, they might pretend like they're budging and say that they want some witnesses called or something like
Romney.
That. Mitt Romney, right. Yes. But they're not going to vote to remove the president. But they might be voted to be removed by their own constituents.
That's right.
And that is why this is important, I think, more than the president is going to stay the president. And that's tragic news for everyone.
Right.
But it's also a reality in which I feel like we're probably living in right now, as unfortunate as that is. But, you know, some of these people who are running for re-election in 2020 who are in the Senate, who are just going to sort of saddle up to the president and pretend like this isn't happening and just shut their eyes to the whole situation, I think there will be payback for.
Yeah, I was saying to my parents the other day, I was like, for someone like Susan Collins, and I always use her as the example because she gets all the credit for being the moderate, responsible Republican left in the room, and she's not anymore.
Right.
She's now an extremist.
Right.
But this is already a lose-lose situation for her. If she votes with the president, she's going to lose her job. If she doesn't vote with the president, she's going to lose her job. Like, she can't win here.
Right.
So why not do the right thing?
Right. As Adam Schiff said.
Yeah.
Right, you know, right matters.
Right matters. And right really matters if you're between a rock and a hard place anyway.
Right.
Like, some of these guys are, and that's, you know, Lamar Alexander is leaving office. Why not do the right thing on the way out?
Yeah, I know, right?
Like,
yeah, he's been a huge sort of, like, person of interest here.
Yes.
As, like, people who...
He's sort Democrats of the mystical
like, why is he right? Yeah,
because you know there's the Romney Murkowski Collins brigade, which has been teasing the idea that they might be interested in witnesses. They're not going to pull the trigger on anything that they don't get prior approval. They're wimps. Yeah. But we've been sort of like, who could be the fourth vote that could kind of take their leverage over the edge?
Right.
And that's why Lamar Alexander is suddenly on everyone's radar.
Yeah.
But
we've talked about this a million times. I mean, like, what's Cory Gardner thinking?
No,
you know, in Colorado. I mean, that's a man who's going to lose an election probably, again, one way or the other.
Exactly.
And there's others, too. Yeah. I mean, it just sort of, like, it doesn't all add up to me. Like, they don't get, and this is what I feel like, you know, another thing that Schiff said that was like, you know, this is going to catch up to them at some point, you know? Yeah. I mean, like, and I think that might have actually been in his press conference and not in his closing statement. But I mean, you know, it's like, the president is going to continue to do what the president does. And like, whether you vote for this impeachment or not, like your hands are dirty, and that, like, history will know that.
Yeah.
And so it may, even, you know, even if you happen, even if you by chance win your next election after sticking with the president, like, you will not be remembered kindly for this. The only way to have any sort of, you know, is to actually vote for removal. I mean, that's how you
could cement her place in history as one of the most important senators of all time.
Right?
If she voted to remove Donald Trump from office, I mean, that would change the trajectory of Susan Collins.
Right. And I mean, think about John McCain.
Yeah, exactly.
Who has been in political office for a million years, who has done, who has run for president, who has been, you know, I mean, was a prisoner of war. He crashed the 100 million airplanes. Like,
He's a terrible pilot.
That is a man who has, like, a long obituary.
Yes.
Right? The thing that we will probably most remember him for is the thumbs down.
That's right.
For getting rid of Obamacare.
Yesterday to my mother, and my mother was like, I think that Susan Collins thinks that she's Olympia Snow, and she's not. She's wimpier than Olympia Snow. Olympia Snow, I think was maybe a genre of Republican who might have been like, this is enough. Because Maine had a Trump, but it was because there was a three-way race. He never won a majority of the votes. And they literally became the first state to adopt ranked choice voting over it. Because they were like, this can never happen again.
Right. Yeah.
And so Maine is not with them on this.
Yeah.
Maine is a state that doesn't like to have clear positions on anything. You know, they have an independent in the House. They, you know, there are other senators and independent. I mean, but they are a state that doesn't stand for radicalism, because they did it and it was horrible. And so the idea that Susan Collins, you know, who thinks of herself as an Olympia Snow-esque Republican,
right,
is, you know, sort of vaguely teasing, like, she might ask for witnesses, is like weak sauce. Like,
right, I know.
Tell us that you're considering. Right. Tell us that you are considering voting to remove this president from office. And then suddenly you are going to have so much free advertising for your next campaign that you are literally not going to know what to do.
Right.
Because you will have the John McCain of treatment, where you will be treated, even though you've made numerous terrible decisions, as John McCain did leading up to his death while he was in the Senate. But that one decision made it impossible to just characterize him as an asshole.
Right.
Yeah. And that is what she needs right now.
Yeah.
That's literally the only thing that could save her career.
I agree.
And she's not going to do it because she's an idiot. Before we dive into the details of the impeachment trial, though, a few comments off the top. One, it was too long.
I mean,
it's 24 hours is too long for people to be talking.
It is.
And on top of that, this is why they should have made a splashier choice with the impeachment managers.
Well, because
at the point that they are only performing it for television,
because exactly, as Brent
said earlier today to me, he was like, who is the audience here? The Senate isn't going to budge. This is to convince the American people.
Right.
Once you're going to convince the American people, you got to make it TV worthy.
Right.
And Adam Schiff did his best, but no other person really could rise. That Jerry Nadler in the middle of the night one night kind of got exercised, and that was kind of exciting. But like, beyond that, no one really made the news. The news was so overwhelming because it went on for so – and the news cycle was confusing because they were going to 1 in the morning. And so you could watch at 1 in the morning, but you couldn't figure out – the news next day couldn't report on what had happened.
Right. I think they're taking their job too seriously. I think
much too seriously.
I think is what they're doing.
Yeah, once the Senate's not taking it seriously, let's dive in.
Right? Like, they really needed some, like, high-quality, like, kabuki theater.
Yes.
Is
another thing I've been talking about where, you know, my mom keeps calling her senators, who are Chuck Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand, and they keep being like, what do you want us to do? We're Democrats. We're doing what we can do. And she's making what I think is a very fair point, where she's like, no, you're in the room. I'm not in the room. Don't call me and tell me there aren't enough people calling you. Or don't, you know, when I call, don't say, well, enough people aren't calling us, so we don't really know what people think. You do actually know what people think about this. Yeah. A majority of Americans want this man removed from office. Mm-hmm. So you do actually know where
and that's true. We are
that's
now.
That's a fact.
That's a fact.
That's a statement of fact in a poll that was taken that is true.
Yeah.
But so don't tell me that it's just like, oh, it doesn't seem like people care and whatever. Obviously we care. But you have made it clear that you don't intend to do anything. So there is only so much we outsiders can do. But you are in the room.
Yeah.
Why can't the Democrats need to try something?
Yeah.
And I don't know what that is because the first thing people say when you say that is, well, what do you think they should do then?
Uh-huh.
I'm like, I'm not a fucking senator. I don't know. But it feels like we are in a moment where there is like a danger that we can all perceive. And even the Republicans, when pressed, can admit that Trump is not acting in the interest of the country. They can admit that he has broken the law. They'll admit a lot of this. They know all of this is going on.
Yeah.
They're cynical, but they're not seeing with their eyes. But I just like don't understand how our strategy of moving forward here. And I know that the Senate loves decorum and they love just like being polite and responsible and never saying anything. But like Chris Murphy is the only person I can think of who has even tried anything interesting in the last 6 years. Because he had a sit-in in the Senate. And I just like, why isn't anyone like thinking, what can we do? What can we actually do here? Like, obviously we can't do something procedurally. They're going to shut us down. So what can we do not procedurally? What is a person who is sitting in this room am I empowered to do?
Right.
And one of the things that maybe would help them think this through a little more clearly is if they were allowed more than candy, milk, and water on the floor of the Senate. Because what we also found out is that the only food items allowed on the floor of the Senate are hard candies, and not even the good kind. Like, idiot hard candies.
Yeah, there's just, like, a chest of hard candies that, like, is open to
everyone.
Like,
the kind that, like, old people give you that you don't even want to eat. Milk, like, they're babies. And water.
You know. I think they're being offered milk because of all of their old bones.
I mean, it must be. I just, like, can't imagine a world also in which you're thinking, okay, we have to keep this room pristine. Let's let people bring glasses of milk in here to spill, like, the world's smelliest and the quickest rotting substance all over the chamber.
Yeah.
Like, at least if you let people bring Coca-Cola in, first of all, they'd be hyped up on sugar, so they'd be thinking straight. And second of all, doesn't smell bad when you spill it.
No. And it also has, it has caffeine in it, too, besides sugar. They can't even have coffee.
No. I mean, and like, if you're going to have gross-smelling drinks spilling places, at least let it be coffee. Milk is not, it's so mind-boggling to me that milk would be the one.
Yeah.
Like they are actual babies. that is what babies drink.
Yeah.
In any case. So, we learned that, and then we also, Trump was kind of mad because his defense got a Saturday start date, which is not good for ratings. And you know ratings are all that he cares about. And I am for it, obviously. Of course they should be on Saturday. They weren't going to say anything of any use to anyone.
I know.
But I want to note that before we dive into what the comments actually said, because what they lacked in good ratings days, they made up for in brevity.
Yes.
And what we lacked in brevity, we made up for in being on
television 24
hours a day for 3 days straight,
right.
4 days straight. So that's just something to keep in mind as we go forward.
Right, yeah.
In any case, so Schiff's closing remarks are kind of the only thing that went even a little viral.
Yeah.
And he's been pretty decent the whole time. He's just very long-winded. And on Thursday, his almost viral declaration was, you know you can't trust this president to do what's right for this country.
Yeah.
Some sort of that sentiment.
Yeah.
On Friday, he got in trouble because he mentioned a news report that Republican senators had been warned that their heads would be, quote, on a pike if they voted against Trump. And Republicans took grave offense to it, even though it's obviously true. And then got mad about it. But his speech also turned hashtag right matters into the siren call of Twitter for that next morning. That was the last line of his speech, which was that right matters.
Yeah.
But so He also got some great coverage on in right-wing news sources, including, this is actually my favorite headline of this entire event, which was, amateur thespian Schiff tries out some new lines. That was a Fox News headline Fox News, that I think was maybe like medium genius.
Yeah.
Tucker Carlson also hilariously called him a wild-eyed conspiracy nut.
I mean.
Kettle, meat pot. Like, what a funny thing for a man in a bow tie who spouts conspiracy theories for a living to call you a wild-eyed conspiracy nut. That's impressive. But so Schiff also at the end of his comments laid out sort of a point-by-point rebuttal of what the GOP argument would be since they don't get a chance to respond after the Trump team's defense. So basically by the time they got up to make their defense, it was like, all right, well, we already have heard your arguments. But Trump's team came in Saturday morning, said, don't worry, we're going to be quick. Everyone was relieved because they'd all been sitting there slash snoozing in there for hours on end all week.
All the Democratic senators were like, great, let's get the fastest ticket back to Iowa.
Exactly. Right. All of the Republican senators
were... They all had events in Iowa last night.
I saw that, and it was all, I think it was all events where they were sort of initially planned in case the candidate couldn't show
up. Because so
it was
too, like
Michael Moore and AOC together.
AOC,
you know.
Yeah, I know, and because they've been there for the last couple days.
Right.
But then, like, Bernie was with them last night, and I don't know if that was necessarily expected.
Yeah, I'm sure that wasn't planned.
Yeah.
And there was actually a very adorable video of Liz Warren learning that she'd gotten the endorsement of the Des Moines Register.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
That was actually kind of charming. Oh. She does a little dance, but not, and in a, it's not a great dance, obviously, but it's not in a contrived way.
Is it better than
way.
Her Castro dancing
that? It is in that it was unplanned dancing. Unplanned dancing is the best kind if you're going to be like an old white lady running for president, just FYI. But so in any case, Trump's team comes in. They try to woo the senators with promises to be quick. And then they basically just try to attack Schiff's credibility and accuse the House Democrats of omitting exculpatory evidence. But here's what that – I mean, let me go through that point by point. Because they basically were trying to portray Trump as like innocent.
Yeah.
And then – And then accused, said the Senate was being asked to overturn the election results.
I know. I love that they're turning this into, I mean, I don't love it. It's ridiculous. But like, it's so funny that they're turning this into, they're turning it into like an election meddling.
I know. Which is so funny also because the man was 3 million votes short of the majority.
I know.
We overturned our own election results in letting him take the office in the first place.
And also, I feel like going on national television talking about election meddling is maybe not what you would want as President Trump.
Certainly not. I mean, right? it is in the sense that what he really likes to do is take a thing that he's doing and accuse someone else of doing it as if he can't be blamed for doing it himself.
Right.
So this is exactly what his strategy is.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's an interesting look into the brain of a narcissistic madman. because he, and also he seems to get away with it. It's the kind of thing that he does where, you know, when people ask you for really bold things, sometimes you just say yes because you're shocked. He's just doing that to us over and over. I mean, I use this example all the time. I've probably said it on the podcast before, but once in college, one of my friends asked me for a ride to the doctor at 6 a.m. And I was like, I was like, first of all, take a taxi. But second of all, I said yes because I was like, well, okay. I mean, I guess like I was so shocked someone would think to ask someone that. It wasn't, by the way, like an emergency procedure. It was like some kind of ridiculous thing. That did not require, like, emotional support. It didn't require anything like that. I was just like, oh, she just, like, isn't thinking about the fact that then I wake up at 5:30 and, like, my day is then a 5:30 wake-up day. She just asked, and I said yes. And then I was, like, shocked at myself for saying yes, but I just didn't know what else to do because I didn't know how to explain to her, a person who didn't realize it was an inappropriate ask, that it had been inappropriate. So I just didn't know what to, like, that's what I feel like Trump is doing to us over and over. He's just gaslighting us into thinking that he's not doing things that we know with our eyes, we can see with our eyes that he's doing because he's accusing other people of doing them. In any case, they also tried to attack Schiff by playing a video of him doing a parody reading of, a reading of a parody transcript of the Zelensky phone call, as if he's not a serious-minded person who was exaggerating the evidence. But then they said that the House Democrats had they sort of picked apart their presentation and said that in portraying how the events had occurred on that phone call, they had left out some important facts. The important fact that they left out was that in addition to mentioning Biden repeatedly, Trump also mentions that he's mad that Europe isn't paying their fair share towards Ukraine's, of Ukrainian aid to protect them from Russia. And so he was doing his usual thing of complaint. It's like NATO. It's like no one is ever paying their fair share towards anything we're paying our fair share towards, according to him. So we did a little of that on the call, and they were like, see? Obviously, there was more context there. And then they also said that Sondland and other witnesses were making assumptions and had no firsthand knowledge to support the quid pro quo claim, even though I would contend that all of them had firsthand knowledge and enough information to support that claim. But then they did a procedural attack where they were like, you know, we didn't comply with the subpoenas because they weren't legally valid because the entire House didn't vote on the thing before they gave us the subpoena. It was like a whole confusing thing that was like, that's not what you were saying when you weren't complying with them.
Well, right.
You were saying that they, you know, like, your argument is that you weren't given the chance to participate.
Right.
If your argument is that, and they weren't legally valid subpoenas, then you say, we would like to participate.
Right.
What needs to happen.
When he was at Davos this week, was asked about this and, like, made some comment about, like, how, you know, we have all the stuff that they want.
Right.
Remember? He was just like, so, I mean, it's not as, like, this stuff exists and is out there, and the DOD has it, and the OMB has it, and it's like, it's there.
Right.
Like, it's ready to be handed over.
That's right.
At someone's request.
Exactly. But.
Yeah.
It's not a. Yeah. It was crazy that Davos was going on during all of this, too.
I know.
Because Davos is, like, actually, like, an Illuminati meeting.
Yeah.
It's just, like, not the smart Illuminati, the wealthy Illuminati. So Davos is just like where wealthy people pat themselves on the back for listening to speeches from other wealthy people and like maybe inviting one extra person to give a splashy speech that they don't listen to.
Yes, exactly.
But so Trump was trying to make news from Davos so that he wouldn't, you know, have to hear about news.
Yeah. But also probably nice for him that he could skip the country while.
I think so. I know. I was like, maybe he won't come back. Also, though, he did tweet more than he's ever tweeted in his life in the last few days. I think he set a tweet record, I think 2 days in a row. And some of the tweets, like, he went on some bizarre tangents. Like, at one point, he was listing all of the enemies that were trying to get him impeached. And, like, AOC was one of them. It was, like, Adam Schiff and the House Democrats and whatever. And AOC, like, the AOC's trying to get me to... I was like, AOC's unrelated AOC, to all of this.
Right. And also, she successfully got you impeached.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. They did the part that they promised to do. And that is now done. So... He doesn't really know the difference between impeachment and then the Senate trial to removal.
Yeah.
In any case, Mitt Romney is shopping around the idea that he might be open to witnesses. Mm. I think because he's also curious what John Bolton is going to say, because John Bolton is trying to titillate all of us with details. The problem is that we know for a fact that his book just has all the same details as the Lev Parnas.
Right.
As Lev Parnas is saying, which is like, fine, you know, John Bolton telling us those details is yet another person confirming that story.
I know. But I hope John Bolton's book doesn't sell one single copy because he could have really teased up the deliciousness of this book had he just responded to the House subpoena.
Exactly. Like.
But now everybody else is spilling the beans.
A book sales nightmare.
And he's writing a tell-all book that has already been told.
Yeah. No, I know. He doesn't deserve one single sale on this book.
No, he doesn't.
Because let me tell you, you already know what's in the book.
Yes.
And if he cared about America...
he would have told us himself.
He would have told us himself.
Right, under oath.
Under oath.
Yeah.
Mustache and all.
That's right.
So, in any case, don't buy John Bolton's new book.
Yeah.
But do encourage people to let him testify.
Yeah.
Because that would be exciting. I have a new concern that I've made up, or maybe my mom and I made it up together.
Yeah.
I can't remember how I came to this new concern. It just occurred to me.
Yeah.
What if Joe Manchin stabs us in the back?
Oh, that's a good one.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, we are looking for 4 senators. We have 3 and Lamar Alexander. People have eyes on Lamar Alexander. What do we do?
I don't know.
If Joe Manchin stabs us in the back?
I feel
How do we stop a Joe Manchin backstab?
I feel like if there are 4 Republicans, then he won't.
Right. But if there are 3 Republicans... Well, I guess we need 4 anyway.
You need 4 anyway. That's
so what, I guess he can do whatever he wants if there's not 4.
Right.
You're right. He's not going to be the one.
I don't think so.
I mean,
he's his own brand of awful. But, like, it just doesn't seem right to me. I don't know.
I guess he can't. He's not going to be the decisive vote on this.
I don't think so.
But
no.
I worry about him.
I do too.
In any case, that was a side. I just wanted to panic everyone about that and then move on.
Hey, it's worth to cover our bases.
Yeah.
Like, get on the... telephone to Joe Manchin.
Get on the horn with Joe Manchin.
Get on the horn. Yeah, that's right. Yep. Dial him up.
That's right. Mm-hmm. In any case, now on to elections.
Yeah.
Our bread and butter.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Big news.
Oh, yeah.
The Des Moines Register endorsed this week.
Sure.
And they endorsed Liz Warren, as I maybe mentioned already.
So exciting.
Yes.
I mean, we were thrilled about this.
Obviously.
Just because that's the world that we're living in now.
Yeah. We're living in a world where the Des Moines Register has backed off of their two-time Clinton endorsing life.
Right.
And gone back to their roots of endorsing a progressive candidate in the race.
Because
they had endorsed John Edwards.
Yep.
They endorsed Bill Bradley.
Yep.
I'm not going to pretend I know who Paul Simon is. He's not the singer in Simon and Garfunkel, but he was the candidate they endorsed in 1988, and he was famous for wearing horn-rimmed glasses and a bow tie.
Mm-hmm.
But they had, for a while in the early 2000s, been endorsing on the left, and then they started endorsing Clinton, and their brand fell apart.
Right.
But one among their, you know, they write story highlights in their for their own endorsement at the top of the article. And the first highlight is many of her ideas aren't radical, they're right. And that is, I think, the main point with someone like Liz Warren and the brand that she's been trying to build and struggling a little lately.
Yep.
But the idea is Liz Warren is not radical. Bernie Sanders is radical.
Sure.
He loves that. That's his brand. And we love him for that.
Mm-hmm.
Liz Warren is not trying to look like she's radical to you.
Right.
She's trying to look like she's right.
Yes.
And so I'm pleased that that is how they chose to frame it.
Yep.
So in any case, that was a very exciting situation.
And I talked to a few people back in Iowa, and that was surprising.
Yeah, I would.
So I think a lot of people thought it was probably not any of the other three. I guess Sanders is ahead in Iowa, which we're going to get to in a second.
Right.
But, that it would have
like
been
Biden,
literally
Judge Klobuchar.
Any of the three of them seemed like it was probably where that was headed.
By the way, Klobuchar is like cleaning up in endorsements.
I know.
For someone who is not polling in any meaningful way at all.
No.
Like I saw a national poll from Washington Post this week where she wasn't even on the poll.
Oh,
she was below 4% down with non-people.
I know,
So I don't know what that's about. But we also went and looked back at the Des Moines Register's history of endorsement.
Yeah, unfortunately, the list of Des Moines Register endorsees is a definitive list of people who did not become A, president, or B,
winners of the Iowa caucus.
Winners of the Iowa caucus.
Right.
Right.
It begins with 1988's Paul Simon.
Right.
A person history has not remembered.
Right. Dick Gephardt won the caucus. He was from Missouri, so he was close by, but Dukakis won the nomination. 1992, they didn't endorse because Harkin was running and basically everybody skipped, and he's from Iowa, so they didn't have to do anything. Bill Bradley. In 2000, Gore won. 2004, they endorsed John Edwards and John Kerry won. In 2008, they endorsed Hillary Clinton and Obama won. And in 2016, they endorsed Hillary Clinton again, and she and Sanders tied.
Yeah.
So, and then...
They've had more luck on the Republican side,
but only
in the 80s and 90s.
Right. I mean, in 1988, they picked Bob Dole, and he won the caucus, but Bush won the nomination.
Right.
And in 96, they picked Bob Dole again, and Dole did win both.
Do you remember when Bob Dole ran for president?
Sure do.
I mean, what a world.
I know.
It's, like, hard to remember...
Uh-huh.
That Bob Dole was once a real presidential candidate and not just like a person running in a primary.
Yeah,
but he was.
I know.
That was the Ross Perot year, though.
Yes.
That was a confusing year. Anyway.
In 2000, they endorsed George W. Bush, and he did win the caucus and the nomination. And then they started going awry after that.
Yeah.
Although I would say that they
all
kept
of this...
it was the voters that went awry, I think, at this point. Actually, not so much the Des Moines.
I was going
to
say.
Because in 2008, they endorsed McCain, which seemed reasonable. And then Mike Huckabee won. In 2012, they endorsed Romney, which again seemed sort of reasonable. And Santorum won. And then in 2016, they endorsed Marco Rubio. Again, vaguely reasonable.
Right.
And then Ted Cruz won.
I mean, this is a who's who of who was insane that year. And like Huckabee, Santorum, and Cruz.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not what you're looking for.
No.
That year that Mike Huckabee won the Iowa caucus was also like,
I know,
just delicious in so many ways.
Yeah.
In any case, Klobuchar got a big endorsement in New Hampshire. The union leader endorsed her there this week.
Yeah.
For reasons that are a little suspect.
Yeah, because she's sharp.
Yeah.
She's witty.
She's sharp and witty. Sharp elbowed, maybe. I feel like, though, I don't think of Amy Klobuchar. They literally say that they need someone with the strength and stamina to go toe-to-toe with the tweeter-in-chief.
Really?
Amy Klobuchar is not, like, a Twitter queen.
No.
She's not great at... She's not, like, good at... she's good at certain comebacks with certain people on certain issues, but she's not like famous for her one-liners.
She's been
or
telling
something.
The same joke about what Donald Trump's hair would have done in that blizzard when she made her announcement like well over a year ago. I mean, she's been telling that any chance She gets it every town hall she can go to. I mean, she literally has a joke.
Yeah,
she has
that's the one.
A single joke.
Yeah. And I think I have an impression when she speaks that she thinks that saying that she announced in a snowstorm is a joke, but just like doesn't have a punchline for it. She always says it as if she thinks we're going to find it.
She's got a lot of hilarious setups. Amy Klobuchar, the king of the setup.
That's right. Very few punchlines. So that's, you know, a thing that's going on in New Hampshire.
Sure.
Meanwhile, latest polling, Iowa, a bunch of polls have Sanders out ahead right now.
Yes.
I mean,
or not
out ahead. Another problem with the Iowa polling situation, Brent once said to me, the only poll that matters is the Des Moines Register poll.
Yeah, I mean,
we're about to report on a bunch of polls that aren't that.
Right.
And so just do with that what you will.
Yeah.
But the Times released a poll this...
But they showed similar movement anyway. I mean, all of these are sort of like tracking together, even if they don't have the same results. Because, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, we were talking about when the last Des Moines Register poll that came out, and everybody was shocked and appalled that Sanders was ahead in it. And that is what this new New York Times poll shows as well. He's ahead by more in this poll than he was in that Iowa poll. But assuming that that movement is true, I mean, that movement could just be continuing. But they have him ahead 25. He's at 25. Buttigieg is at 18. Biden is at 17. Warren is at 15. And Klobuchar is at 8.
Yeah.
But this is like a direct flop, basically, for Sanders and Warren, and then Biden and Buttigieg just stay the same.
Yeah.
I mean, this Sanders went up 6 points and Warren went down 7 points. So, I mean, it really, they just, you know, and that, I mean, that makes sense to me, I guess. I mean, they've been sort of like battling it out for who's going to hold the progressive mantle. And Warren has sort of seemingly backed off trying to be that person to a certain degree.
No, I think she has.
Much to her detriment. I agree. She has made, as smart as she is and as right as she might be on a lot of things, I think that she has, there have been many like instances of bungling this campaign.
I think she
could still be ahead 25 to 18.
Yes.
That could be her.
It felt very clearly to me like she at some point hired a consultant when the campaign started to surge and that consultant has ruined everything.
Yep.
Like, don't.
And she might not have. I mean, I don't know, but I mean, like, something happened.
No, something happened because she stopped saying, she stopped having the one thing, she stopped telling us what she thought.
Yeah.
She started using, you know, the sort of language that obfuscates kind of what her thoughts are.
She started trying to back away. Yeah. She tried to triangulate her way into, you know, appeasing, you know, 7 different constituencies instead just pissing them all off. I mean,
that's not how she started this campaign, taking very clear stances with very, very specific policy suggestions for a lot of, you know, communities that we don't normally get, that don't get air in these campaigns very often on a lot of issues that are not trendy issues that people don't talk about enough. And she's, and the whole idea was we're proposing some challenging kinds of changes.
Right. Big structural change.
And now it seems like she's sort of trying to use the language of the DNC establishment to explain a progressive vision, and it's not possible to do.
Yeah.
You can't use their language to differentiate yourself from them because their language is intentionally confusing.
Yeah. And also, as anyone should have been able to tell, that Sanders is a liar attack went nowhere
and
fast.
Yeah.
Because all of these polls have been taken since that.
Yeah.
So that was a big nothing.
It was also, she should be able to compete with him on the issues.
I know.
Sanders is vague. Intentionally vague in his, like, we know that he is vague.
Right.
We are people that like Bernie Sanders, and we also know that he is being vague intentionally on a lot of things because he's talking about movement politics. He's not talking about his plans for things. She had a way of addressing the primary concern that progressive but kind of establishment-leaning voters have with a candidate like Sanders in a way that was also inclusive enough that Sanders voters themselves might have been swayed.
Yeah.
Like, I think she fell into this sort of trap that people fall into when they start looking at polls too much and start looking at focus groups too much and stopped messaging clearly. And I think you always win more from messaging clearly than you do from using approved language.
Well, once she got ahead, she started playing not to lose.
Yeah. Right. And you have to just be in.
You have to keep playing to win.
That's right.
So anyway.
This is a commentary on what sexism does to Can't have, it's like an imposter syndrome commentary sure, or something. Yeah. I don't know. But yeah. whatever it is, she's been making some choices that aren't the right ones.
I mean, that's it's a dumb metaphor, but I mean, it's a sport. It's a sport metaphor. I mean, it sort of happens all the time in football. Like, you see a football team gets ahead by a bunch, and then they go into a, quote, prevent defense, where they just basically, like, play back so they don't let anybody get behind them, basically, so they don't give up a touchdown. And then they leave open, like, you know, short passes 15, 20 yards, and I feel like that's sort of like what she did. She pulled back.
Right.
And then, and she shouldn't have. Like, she shouldn't have gone into prevent defense.
I believe that you just made a very apt sports metaphor that I am sure describes perfectly what's going on here. I didn't understand a word of it. I don't fault you for that.
Fine.
That's on me. I still don't understand football.
Next week, while we're in Iowa, we're going to get to watch the Super Bowl. So I'll get to re-explain football to you next week. I'll be sure to point out prevent defense if it happens.
The Super Bowl is like another Easter situation for me, where Brent is called upon once a year to explain the story of Easter to me, and then I pull it apart. And then also once a year at the Super Bowl, he is forced to explain what football is. So looking forward to that. Yeah. In any case, there was a conflicting poll that USA Today did. Has entirely different results for Iowa. So just FYI, no one actually knows the answer. And the interesting thing about this poll was that 45% of those with a preference said it was still possible they might change their minds. 13% are undecided. No one knows. Right. A majority of voters still don't really know who they're going to vote for.
Undecided is in fourth place. With the undecided and Warren are tied the USA Today poll.
Undecided has twice as many votes as Amy Klobuchar currently. Neither of them, by the way, meet the 15% threshold. So that's a little complicated.
That is another key thing here that I think everybody, and I'm it's going to be so interesting coming out of Iowa, because for the first time they're going to release those raw numbers. Yeah. So there could be conflicting narratives coming out of Iowa, which I think is fascinating, because like you literally come Tuesday morning might have two people who say that they won. Because you might have...
You did last time.
Well, you did last time. But I mean, like, there will be numbers to back those things up this time. Because last time was, like, a delegate tie and, like, a 0.3% difference. So, like, there was no definitive winner there. But, like, literally, you might see a first vote count where Sanders won and won clearly. But some of those people who didn't get to 15%, you know, let's say they all went to Buttigieg. And then Buttigieg is the one who, like... technically wins the Iowa caucus based on the rules of how the caucus works. So, like, it's going to be – and this is the first time that they have ever released those raw results.
I'm kind of excited about
it. So it'll be curious to see sort of, like, what the narrative could be muddy.
Well, and also the narrative is going to be really interesting, because we're going to get to see whose voters moved where.
Right.
And that is a way – I mean, that's an insight into how coalitions are viewing them. You know, what kinds of coalitions are – possible in this caucus, like who the winner should be going after,
and you always see those things leading up to the caucus. I'm sure one of the things that we'll read in the newspaper next week while we're in Iowa is that Sanders and Warren made some sort of deal that if they're, you know, that their caucus workers should push, you know, their people if they're not viable
towards
in the room
other.
To the other side. I don't think that well, I mean, Warren is sort of right on the cutoff of that, I guess, but I think that in most places, Sanders is probably going to be viable if he's polling anywhere.
Sanders
is
going to be viable.
He's ahead. He's over 15% in every single poll.
Well, and think about the kinds of places that you think of someone like Warren not being viable are like rural counties where someone like Sanders is actually really popular.
Yeah.
Like the kinds of places that a progressive candidate doesn't sound viable are almost always working class districts where Sanders is hugely popular.
Yeah.
So
yeah. But it'll be interesting to see where, you know, if Klobuchar isn't viable, you know, you and I were talking earlier today. It's like, I don't think all of her, she doesn't like Pete. So like that, and that's not to say that some of her supporters might not like Pete.
Especially in Iowa, where it seems like everyone likes Pete too much.
Right. But, you know, I mean, you would think that her people would probably most reasonably go to Biden, but like you said, and I totally agree with you, I think some of them might go to Warren, even though they're sort of like on diametrically like opposing sides of issues. But
well,
like they, you know,
I mean, think voters don't just vote on issues.
They 100%
don't. That's, I think, been our mistake on the Democratic side for a long time, is assuming that having a progressive platform will make all these voters too nervous to vote for us.
Right.
Voters are given only a few choices about what they can vote on.
Yeah.
And they have to prioritize what matters to them within those choices. So it could be that if you know, it could be that if you live in a county that has been adversely affected by free trade, that your first choice was Bernie Sanders, and then because that's your priority, because your entire community depended on, you know, or thinks they depend on this one issue, it could be that you voted for Donald Trump for that reason,
right?
Because Hillary Clinton was not serving the one need that you had set up as a priority. Think about the way that progressives vote. Every time that a progressive votes, we have to sign up to vote in opposition to one of our principles. I am never, ever given the chance to vote for a candidate that truly agrees with 100% of what I think.
Yeah.
So I have to think, who does the least harm here? And that means I vote for candidates who don't believe in Medicare for All, which is, to me, the most important issue in the entire world.
Yeah.
That means I sometimes vote for candidates who maybe are more into Israel, right or wrong, than I am, because I care about their domestic policy.
Yeah.
Maybe I vote for candidates who are, you know, who are against charter schools, because that matters to me, but, you know, are not necessarily talking about, you know, other education policies, getting rid of Common Core, I don't know, desegregating the schools, whatever it is that I might be interested in. Like, we are all making choices where we have to prioritize the things that matter most in our lives and vote for the candidates that speak to those things. And sometimes candidates who like Amy Klobuchar, for some reason, maybe if that reason is that they like someone who's really a strong woman,
yep,
and want to see someone talk really vocally about the challenges that women face in campaigns and in the workplace, then why wouldn't Warren be their next choice? I mean, it's like, it doesn't mean that, you know, they might not know anything about healthcare policy. Most people don't. It's very confusing.
I know. Right.
But, you know, I mean, so voters don't follow obvious guidelines. So I think we're going to see some, with Klobuchar's people in particular, I'm sort of interested to see, because I think she won't be viable in a lot of rooms. And so I'm curious to see where her people go for sure.
Yeah.
But I'm also curious to see where Buttigieg's people go, because I don't know. He's such a bizarre candidate. And I feel like, even though
who's the next least fun candidate?
Right. Who's the next least fun? And it's like sort of Joe Biden, but even Joe Biden's a little too fun for them.
I think, because
he's kind of unpredictable and wacky.
Yeah, right?
Like, is Amy Klobuchar where they go, even though the two of them hate each other?
I mean, all of the other candidates are having too much fun for Pete Buttigieg.
Everyone. Well, he doesn't approve. I mean, have you seen his new profile picture?
Oh, that's right.
Is epic. It is just him smizing at the camera. Like, is he trying to do like a Blue Steel look? Like, whatever the look is, it's the wrong look.
Yeah.
It's not a picture that a person should take.
Yeah.
It's so uncomfortable to look at. But it's like the image he's trying to get across, which is like, I'm a guy in a suit who looks like Alfred E. Newman and is incredibly young, but like, I'm stern.
But also the most boring person that you've ever met.
That's right. You can't describe this photo.
You don't want to be in a room with me.
Exactly. You will never be able to describe this photo to anyone, because it doesn't have any qualities. It's just madness. In any case, there's some new national polls too. CNN has a new poll. Sanders is ahead in CNN's new national poll.
First time ever leading in a CNN national poll,
I mean,
in two times of running for president.
We're getting there, you guys.
Yep.
We are getting there.
This is it.
He's leading 27-24 to Biden.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the poll is Warren is at 14, Pete is at 11, Bloomberg is at 5, Yang at 4, Klobuchar at 4, Steyer at 2.
Yeah.
He's gained 7 points since the last CNN poll. Sanders.
And there it is. I mean, that's tracking with Iowa.
Yeah, it's tracking
and
with
a lot
Iowa.
Of other polls too.
Yeah,
I mean, there's
other
national
polls too.
That you know, there's been a lot of movement in his direction over the last month. But there were some other things that, like, I think are important to point out here. Also, one thing that I want to point out is CNN really, I mean, just can't get on board with Sanders being
this ahead. It's become like a joke almost, because at this point everyone is so aware of it that I am reading the headlines for the bias, which I did not used to do. And I think a lot of people are actually doing that now, because I'm not even seeing it anymore. And not, I just, like, in my head I translate the headlines to factually represent that Sanders is in the lead. Because I'm like, I'm so used to it at this point that I can't even read them the right way anymore.
Well, the headline of this poll was Sanders pulls even with Biden.
Right.
And
except
I realized,
that he pulled ahead.
And I get that they are within the margin of error.
But that's not how it would have been portrayed if Biden had pulled ahead of Sanders.
Of course not. No. Biden with clear lead in Democratic race.
Takes
no
huge
one, no one, no one else with chance to win.
Right.
Like
exactly.
That, yeah, exactly. And they did it again in they also said, well, I'll just read this whole thing, because there's a few sort of like specific things in this poll that I thought were interesting. They said Sanders has made gains across the board. He's pulling away from Warren with liberals. He's at 33% and she's only at 19%. And that is, I think, sort of per what we were talking about earlier with some of the, you know,
some of the missteps she's been making.
That she's been making. Right. But here, and this is a direct quote from the CNN. Sanders has also pulled about even with Biden among voters of color. Now, he's ahead 30-27%. So he's about pulled.
He's
about
pulled
even.
About even. Like, he finally got there.
Finally just almost got there, except he's ahead.
Except he's ahead.
But also, that's huge. I mean, this was, yeah. We were talking about this and, you know, in that blog that we put about his electability. Sort of, and this was back in early December. NPR was polling a similar number with non-white voters. And that's been a constant knock for him. He should be shouting this from the rooftops. Yeah. I mean...
Well, it's, like, wild because in many ways he has, like, the most diverse coalition of any candidate. And right. He's constantly knocked for not, even though his, you know, even his surrogates are often... they're almost all people of color and mostly women.
Women, right.
Like, his coalition is... And, you know, when you pull non-white voters more broadly, you often get Biden as the lead, but non-white voters under 35 are in favor of Sanders by a margin that is like wild, like a 30-point margin or something.
Poll.
No, exactly. And this is the whole poll. Yeah. So, like, obviously, we're not, his coalition is not this Bernie bro mythology.
Right.
And continues to be a knock against him. And it also, every time his supporters do something obnoxious, it gets blamed on Bernie bros. And, like, here's a secret, you guys. Everyone's supporters are obnoxious.
So true.
Everyone's. There is no campaign on earth that doesn't have obnoxious supporters.
Right.
We are obnoxious as people, and we are, even as we have wildly swung between Warren and Sanders, we have been obnoxious for both of them. Right. I was the other day obnoxious for Warren, even though I have sort of decided I'm probably voting for Sanders because I just felt annoyed that someone else was knocking her.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, supporters are obnoxious.
Yeah.
That's not bro culture. That's political culture. Sorry about it. That's it.
Yeah.
But so in any case, Sanders also has the most excited supporters.
Yeah. And it has held steady, too, because they pulled this back in October. And in October, 38% of his supporters said that they were very excited to vote for him. And it's the same now.
Right.
When they pulled it, that's maintained. Same number. For Biden, when they pulled it in October, it was 43%. And now it's at 34%. He's taken a 9-point dip. And for Warren, she has fallen from 41% to 29%. So she's fallen 12 points. So that's, you know,
I just want to point out, we did some quick math there just now.
I know. I did not have the original
Red
numbers.
Put
I
how only much had, they had dipped
I only
and the new
had
number.
How much they dipped. And I was like, 34 plus 9 is 43. Yeah, I was doing like some, you know, like third grade math in there. And it was a struggle, by the way.
But it worked out brilliant. You didn't even skip a beat. You just sounded like a guy who can add.
Nice.
But so in any case, everyone keeps saying a plurality of Democrats still think Biden has the best chance to beat Trump.
Yes.
I think that's because his messaging has been 100%. I'm the only guy who can beat Trump.
Yeah. However, so Biden leads that very clearly.
Yeah.
However, Sanders has boosted that by quite a bit. So 45% say that person is Biden and 24% say that Sanders. But that is...
And everyone else is in single digits, by the way.
But that 24% number is an 8% improvement. That means he was at 16%, the way.
Thanks,
Brent. Fast math.
Some fast math for you.
and that's just since December. That's not even since October. Yeah. So that's just in the last, like, little over a month.
Well, I think as we've been sort of very clearly fighting an electability war since then, because I can't imagine you were the only person who sat down over the holidays lost your shit about how everyone was like, it's nice we like him, but he can't win.
Yeah.
Like, the person that can win is the person who people vote for.
Right.
You have to have voters to win.
Yeah.
But we just saw a Washington Post poll, and I referenced it a little bit earlier today, that had wildly different results. So who knows what's going on? It had Buttigieg under Yang and Bloomberg. They had Bloomberg at 8%, Yang at 7%, and Buttigieg at 7%. So it's crazy out there.
Yeah.
You can't know what's going on.
Didn't Klobuchar have like 4 or something?
Yeah,
like
Klobuchar
that?
Wasn't even on the ballot. Yeah. She wasn't in the rankings.
Yeah.
So this is just to remind you that nobody actually knows.
I know.
The polls don't mean anything. No one actually knows anything.
And it's really interesting because we're going to talk about, you know, we talked about Klobuchar getting endorsed in New Hampshire. There's a very real chance that they might not get to vote for her.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I
don't know how she...
I guess it's only a week later. So it's like maybe she doesn't drop out the next morning. Like, you stay in just because maybe you go on national television and cry or something. And maybe that helps.
Yeah.
But like, if she doesn't, I think, win or get second or even a close third in Iowa, like, then I just don't know. How does she go on? What's
her
plan?
I have a conspiracy
theory
for
you. What's her
plan? So just get ready.
I'm so excited. I didn't see this coming. This is an unplanned conspiracy
I just thought of it.
Okay, great. Okay,
it's an unplanned conspiracy theory. I think that she is the only viable moderate candidate in a in the sense that she's the only candidate who's not like a silly person. So I think there is like establishment incentive to keep her in the race. Oh, and I think she will find the money.
Oh.
Because I think they need her to get deeper into the season when someone like Buttigieg starts to flag. Buttigieg is going to lose.
Which is happening.
But also the first two states are like vastly majority white sort of like, you know, states that where his Midwestern background kind of comes in handy. Right. And then we go into South Carolina and then we go into Nevada and then we go into Super Tuesday. And like Buttigieg is going to fall apart after that. So he's going to flag after a while.
Right.
And Biden is just not
a poor front runner.
He's a poor front runner and he's not a reliable candidate. Right. He loses, you know, he loses traction unexpectedly because he says stupid shit all the time.
Yeah.
And so I don't think that he's a safe candidate for them to have in the race.
Yeah.
The establishment doesn't have a safer candidate than Amy Klobuchar right now.
That's true.
So I think they need her.
Yeah.
I don't think there is an option for her to drop out. I, you know, maybe she drops out, you know, after Super Tuesday or something like that. But I think they need her to stay in the race through these first few races because they need her to stay in past when some of these early leaders are going to start filtering out because she's their only hope for having a Republican on the Democratic ballot.
Interesting. You know? I'll buy it.
Yeah. That's a conspiracy theory patented by one Lila Nordstrom. Trademark January, whatever today is.
Yeah.
2020.
Sanders also ahead in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Which...
Well, he's from Vermont.
Right, but I mean,
he hasn't been leading, though, the whole time.
I was going to say he hasn't. There has been a crazy flip in one of these polls because the WBUR, which is the NPR Boston affiliate, just released their most recent poll, and it had Sanders ahead 29-17 over Pete. Yeah. And in December, that was the poll that everybody was freaking out that Mayor Pete was ahead.
Yeah.
That was the same
By the way, did you not grow up with just tons of WBUR children's programming? Because they produce like all of the public children's programming in the Northeast, basically.
Oh, they do.
Like every children's show that I grew up watching on NPR, on PBS, was produced by WBUR.
I don't know.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, it is.
Because you just read that like you'd never heard it before. And for some reason, even though it's in Boston, it's like one of the most, it's like a famous affiliate to me.
No, I had to, I knew that there had been a poll released that had him ahead by quite a bit.
Yeah.
And so I had to Google it and it took me to the WBUR website and I was like, I was like, is this a viable poll that I could be looking
no
at?
No New York City person would ever, no New York City child would ever ask that question.
Yeah. The reason why I had in parentheses the Boston NPR affiliate is because I had to look that up.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
I think they do TV too. They're like a PBS NPR affiliate.
Yeah. Sure.
But yeah, no, I'm sure he did. That's, I just thought that was funny because it was like, it's like a, like that sounds, that's such a famous like station code to me. And I was like, he's reading that. Like he's literally never heard these letters before in his life. But New York Twitter has, by the way, been fast and furious recently because Fairway Supermarket got rumored to close. And then they tweeted they weren't closing. And now everyone's like panicking.
Madness.
And then also Papyrus said they were closing. And you know that I just found out this year that I have a Papyrus on my corner in New York.
Oh my God,
it's been there
funny.
For
they
10
are closing,
years.
Aren't they?
Yeah, they're closing
everywhere.
Yeah, it was
everywhere. Just the Beverly Center yesterday. And they were having a closeout.
But I was like, well, no wonder. Because I have had one on my corner for 10 years, never had occasion to go in there or even remember that it was on the corner. Yeah. So in any case, this has been a fun week for silly political scandals too.
Mm-hmm.
And really, this is the story I wish we could have led with, is Hillary Clinton's enemy making.
I know.
Because not only is Tulsi Gabbard...
keeping.
Enemy keeping. Tulsi Gabbard is suing Hillary Clinton in New York, by the way, for...
I just love this because it's
carelessly
so ridiculous.
And recklessly impugning her reputation.
Yeah, this is...
For $50 million in damages.
I mean...
I love it.
It's so good. It's so stupid.
It's not
dumber. Going anywhere. Yeah. It's insane. And I...
And I approve.
Deeply approve.
Gabbard said in her statement on Thursday, Hillary Clinton and her allies want you to know that if you dare cross them, they will destroy your reputation as well.
Yes.
In any case, that's because as you probably remember, because we reported on it ad nauseum, Hillary Clinton went on a podcast and said that Tulsi Gabbard was a Russian asset.
Yeah.
And then also accused Jill Stein of being a Russian asset.
Yes.
But then Hillary Clinton doubled down on her take down the candidates. I was going to say the left, but that's not really Tulsi Gabbard. Just take down the people method. For the year. And so there's this new documentary coming out on like, what is it, Hulu or something?
Which no one is looking for.
No one has been looking
for. No one asked for that.
No one wants any more information about it. Hillary Clinton had an illustrious career that lasted many years, and that's fine. And it would now be fine if we didn't have to constantly have new programming about the illustrious career of Hillary Clinton. There are books about it if you want to read about it.
Yes.
It's an inspiring story, blah, blah, blah. It feels like this is not the time. But in any case, apparently, according to The Hollywood Reporter, in the interview, she said that nobody likes Bernie Sanders. And then let's just read the whole quote because the quote is epic. He was in Congress for years. He had one senator support him. Nobody likes him. Nobody wants to work with him. He got nothing done. He was a career politician. It's all just baloney, and I feel so bad that people got sucked into it. First thing, Hillary Clinton calling someone a career politician as if that's an insult is real rich. Second of all, we have noted repeatedly on this podcast that people don't like Bernie Sanders on the Hill. Bernie Sanders is a threat to the way that they're used
and
to getting things
done. And
he knows
that people don't like that. Yeah. Did you see that clip from the New York Times interview for their endorsement thing where he was just sort of like, I'm not going to call you and wish you happy birthday.
No. I feel like the Hill runs on a kind of like glad-handing dinner party circuit that he is not a party to.
Yeah.
And also the Senate runs using a kind of, you know, sort of glad-handing dinner party circuit that a partyless person doesn't have access to. Bernie Sanders' staff doesn't work the way the other staffs do because they don't have a party, so they have to kind of be creative. Mm. And you hear this a lot with – there are frequently – and the reason I'm most annoyed about this is the kind of thing that most often gets said about young women in the Senate. And like Kirsten Gillibrand, people say – people don't like her.
Nobody likes
people don't like Amy Klobuchar. And I get it. Amy Klobuchar sounds like she's mean.
Right.
But like this kind of thing doesn't mean that they're not delivering for their constituents, because even though I don't agree with anything Amy Klobuchar does, her constituents want someone who's a moderate, medium Republican doing moderate – and she's an effective senator.
Sure.
Not towards aims I share, but she is. Kirsten Gillibrand is an incredibly effective senator, and Bernie Sanders is a really effective senator.
He is.
And you don't have to be liked on the Hill to be an effective senator.
Right.
And I hate that people on the Hill constantly conflate that.
Yeah.
Because he, like everyone, clearly didn't go down there to make friends. And you know what? You don't have to.
That's right.
If friendship is not a viable option given your political position, then try being annoying.
Yeah.
It works, too.
Right?
Like, about it. In any case, Bernie responded by saying, on a good day, my wife likes me, so let's clear the air on that one.
Yeah. He sort of, like, didn't really give this much thought, which is good for him.
The reason it blew up was because she was asked if she would support him if he was the candidate, and she didn't answer the question.
She wouldn't commit to that. And you know what? This was a good day for me on the internet.
Yeah.
And on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
Which is often a dark place. Because I was really excited by people who I know good and well are not Sanders supporters and who have said nasty things about him and his supporters, being like, look, I also don't like him, but this is not the look.
Yeah.
Like, this is not Hillary Clinton clearly did not get the note that this is not what we're trying to do here.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
when it was just, it came across as so petty and so, like, it was, like, very personal in a way that was kind of weird.
Because
she was trying to use her political capital to...
It felt very bitter.
Yes.
And, like, just in a, like, she was really trying to relive, like, what she thinks was, you know, done to her. Like, in a, you know, and it just sort of, like, it felt gross.
Yeah, it felt gross.
And people saw that, so much so that, and I deeply believe in my heart that she was told by someone, whether it be Tom Perez or whether it be other senators who are in the race or even, because if it was only Bernie bros or perceived Bernie bros that were coming after her because they were, don't get me wrong, then she would have never followed up on this.
Right.
She would have never, and she still didn't really apologize, but she did tweet later in the day. She said, I thought everyone wanted my authentic, unvarnished views, but to be serious, the number one priority for our country and world is retiring Trump. And as I always have, I will do whatever I can to support our nominee. So
I also, she was getting dragged online a lot.
She backtracked that
because,
real fast. That was later in the same day.
Yes. Oh yeah. Well, she got dragged online a lot because she also said somewhere in this that he didn't do anything to support her.
Right.
He had done 40 events with her.
People kept tweeting that note of Bernie's that was from her that said, like,
thanks for all your help or whatever.
Right.
And also, especially because she'd only done, like, 8 events for Obama when she lost to him in the primary.
Oh, I know.
So it was, like, especially embarrassing because Sanders did so much more work on her campaign than she did on Obama's.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Hillary, it's not, it's starting to, you're overstaying your welcome.
Yes.
And I,
and look,
make room.
Right.
There are actually like a lot of great women on the national circuit right now.
Yeah.
Including some that you aren't even going to agree with, but some that you will.
Yeah.
You know, Amy Klobuchar is just as evil as you when it comes to supporting corporations,
right,
the interests of corporations. So you have someone to carry your torch forward.
Yeah.
Get out of the way.
I know. Like, yeah.
In any case, she's making some bad life choices right now. I don't know what to say about that. And it's starting to, it's like, it's going to like chip away at the kind of inspirational figure that she was, where she really is like, on some level, an inspirational figure for especially women in politics.
Sure, get it. You know,
and like, I mean, I feel like this
she's
is
a person who won a presidential election.
Right.
I mean, for
exactly,
you know,
the first woman to do so.
Right.
And she's also a person who has sort of been a trailblazer in a lot of respects. Like,
sure,
why not devote your next life energy to empowering other women to do that? I feel like this has always been my issue with the Clintons, is and with the Obamas too, where they don't build a bench. They don't seem to care about the future.
Yeah.
So they, you know, they kind of build a whole movement around themselves. And if that withers and dies, if they all wither and die, then it's like, well, take everyone down with us, I guess.
Yeah.
But like, this is, she should be using what is a very impressive political career to empower other women to have impressive political careers.
Well, and think about
just shit talk candidates.
And also just think about what your legacy would be if you were able to help elect the person who you felt wronged you in the primary before, you know what I mean? Like, this whole, it's a whole sort of like, she'd have books written about her heroism until the end of time. I mean, she would be sort of like the new team of rivals. Like, can you believe that, you know, I mean, instead of tearing people down, like, what is that? That's not, and I wouldn't even say that that is her brand anyway. But
no,
I mean, like, it's, she's turning it into that, though.
No, her brand is becoming like Bitter Lady on Twitter.
Yeah, right.
She's becoming like Donald Trump.
Right.
It just doesn't make sense to me that if you were robbed of the election as the first, like, elected female candidate, make sure that that's the last person that ever happens.
Yes.
Make sure another woman gets the chance. Don't – this is not helping any female candidates.
No.
It's just hurting a progressive candidate who, by the way, as I recall during the 2016 race, was significantly better than you on a lot of women's issues.
Right.
No one wanted to admit that, but that was true.
Right.
We learned that at a Fox News town hall, so sorry about it. But I just, like, make your legacy be that this should never happen to anyone again.
Yeah.
And she failed on that count because she didn't fight it when the Trump campaign beat her on a technicality.
Right.
You know, she didn't Stacey Abrams it. She didn't figure out a way to make sure this never happens again. Now it's going to happen again. And now she's just sitting around talking, like, shit-talking the front runner.
I know.
Anyway. In final news,
the
greatest treasure trove of a videotape that has ever been made by humans was released thanks to Lev Parnas.
Right. Because, you know, as we know, Trump has been going around saying that he's never spoken to any of the people who have been indicted that are in Rudy Giuliani's sphere.
Right.
And so Lev Parnas was like, well, actually, here's this 80-minute video from a dinner that we were all at
in April of 2018.
In 2018.
Right.
Yeah. But it sort of is like a pretty, it's like a rare glimpse into like private conversations with Trump. And this is what the thing that you probably heard from these tapes was, this was the tape that where Trump said that he wanted to get rid of and like take out Marie Yovanovitch.
Right.
But there were other things that were maybe not as sort of like salacious, but were more insane.
Yes, that's right.
And that's what we're going to focus on right now, because it's some good shit, you guys.
The first
of
a long list of exciting claims that he could have beat Obama in 2012. He's quoted as saying, or he says in the video, Obama would have been easier second term. Romney should have never lost. Obama would have been much easier.
I mean, look, I'm not saying that he would have won that Trump or that election against Obama,
but I will say that
Romney obviously did not, but
was a bad candidate,
but was the wrong and also the wrong candidate in that election. Just, I mean, the thing that the Republicans were most hopped up about in that election was the passage of Obamacare, and they nominated the inventor of Obamacare.
It's like, so it couldn't have been
that
was their Hillary Clinton moment,
right?
That was
and
like
the economy was not yet great at that point. Granted, it was in the shitter when Obama took over. But I mean, like, you know, leading into that election, like, we were putting up, like, zero jobs in the, you know, how many jobs had been added at that point. So, like, I don't necessarily disagree with him here. It sounds insane. And also, like, why is he talking about this in 2018? Well, I think exactly.
That's the bigger question.
That's the bigger, as to whether he's right or wrong about it. It's just sort of, like, give it up. I mean, he's just, like, going around talking about, like, what elections he could or could not win.
Well,
turns out he can win all of them.
Yeah. He had some fun thoughts on the EU. The European Union is a group of countries that got together to screw the United States. It's as simple as that.
That's it.
They did it.
That's why the EU exists.
The best comment that he made on this entire tape is about his desire for a see-through border wall. He made up an entire story based on what I can only imagine were rumors concocted by his own head about how drug smugglers are using catapults to hurl drugs across the border, and claimed, despite the fact that there is not a single reported incident of this ever
happening.
There has
been reported incidents of catapults sending drugs across the border.
They've never hit anyone in the head,
though,
right?
They've never hit anyone. No.
Yeah, he claims that an 100-pound package of drugs struck a Border Patrol agent.
Yeah. He said, here's the quote. He said, they actually said that these drug dealers, it's so dangerous now with a solid wall because they take the drugs. It weighs 100 pounds approximately. A bag. A satchel. They call it a satchel. They throw it out over the wall, and it goes over the wall, and it will land on a guy's head, and he kills him.
Yeah.
You can hear other guests laughing at that
everyone
point,
laughs,
by
yeah.
the way. And he says, yeah, no, our border guys will be walking, and they throw it. So if you can't see through the wall, they throw the drugs. They have a catapult. They throw it over the wall, and it lands on the other side of the wall, and it can hit people. So he wants a see-through border
the
wall.
The inventor of
so
the border wall.
So we can see the catapults on the other side. And the satchels.
Right, the satchels coming.
Before they hit bonk people on the head.
That's right.
He also disappeared Maxine Waters.
Yes.
You know how you haven't seen Maxine Waters in like almost 3 years?
That's right. It's because she's been disappeared by Maxine Waters.
Yeah. He said, you have this one woman, Maxine Waters. I say she's a very low IQ person. You don't hear from her anymore. It's the craziest thing since I've said that. I don't hear from her anymore.
He probably doesn't. I hear from her quite a bit. I don't know. Clearly, Fox News isn't hearing from her as much.
Yes.
On Ukraine.
Oh, this is juicy.
This is juicy, yeah.
Yeah.
Ukraine has oil. Ukraine, how come they don't have any money? Why aren't companies going in? Too risky?
Yeah. No, this was actually a question, though. He was surprised that they had oil.
Yes.
This was news to him.
And then he complained that other countries weren't giving their fair share in aid and that they wouldn't last very long in a fight with Russia.
Yes. Yeah, he asked how long that they would last without any aid. They said not very long, and then someone else said 30 seconds. So and this was a year before he withheld that aid. So he knew good and well when he withheld the aid that was going to be a real clusterfuck for Ukraine in their fight with Russia. So, yikes.
Great.
Apparently, he didn't want to run against Bernie
this
Sanders.
This man loves Bernie Sanders, and I'm sorry. I don't know what to do about that.
But I think also this gives sort of, I mean,
this is like perfect credence to the
right,
situation.
Right, I mean, this was what all Bernie Sanders supporters were saying in 2016. And they didn't have any proof of it other than just it. Common sense, right. But he said, Trump said, had she, Clinton, picked Bernie Sanders as her VP, it would have been tougher. He's the only one I didn't want her to pick. You know, he basically says, we're just getting screwed on trade, and he's right.
Yeah.
So Trump didn't want to run against a Clinton-Sanders ticket in 2016. Also, reading this article made me spend about 3 to 5 seconds trying to remember who Hillary Clinton's vice presidential pick actually was, since it obviously wasn't Bernie Sanders. It took me a second. It didn't take me that long, but it didn't immediately fly into my brain.
It's surprisingly hard it's surprising how hard it is to name some of the VP candidates we've had based on their level of boringness and therefore lack of helpfulness to the campaign.
Right.
Like Biden was in many ways an inspired choice because he makes the news all the time because he says dumb shit constantly.
Sure.
So like as a VP choice, brilliant, because he's never the top choice, you know, the top voice of the ticket.
Yeah.
But he makes the news a lot.
Yes.
But like, remember the day that my mom asked us who had run with John Kerry? And we all just sat around like idiots with no idea.
Right.
And we had voted for the man?
Right.
It was John Edwards.
Right, yeah.
But I mean, like, this was a man that by the point this question was asked.
We had both cast a vote.
We had both cast a vote for.
Oh, actually, I didn't because he dropped out. But I would have.
I casted a vote for him and then he dropped out before I got a chance to. My absentee ballot went in. But in any case, this Tim Kaine is of that genre of people.
Yeah, Tim Kaine is the answer. If you are still thinking to yourself, trying to figure out who Hillary Clinton's
3 weeks ago, or 3 years ago, what happened.
Yeah.
Most importantly, though, did you know? And you probably did, because he's mentioned variations on this in the past, but that Donald Trump might be the Messiah. Igor Fruman, who is the other... Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman are the two indicted buddies of Giuliani, was talking to Trump about a Jewish numerology calculation that some rabbi in Ukraine had done for his name, and informed him that the numbers that he corresponded to, the letters in his name correspond to, add up to 424. And apparently that's the same value as the words Messiah, son of David.
Ah, yes. Fruman said, it's like a miracle. It's exactly the number. Messiah is that person that comes to save the whole world. It's like you're the savior, he added. Oh, and then he said, talk to Jared. He'll explain. And then Trump seemed confused, and he said, what is that? What other numbers you got? Yeah. That conversation, I feel like, is
one of the
solid summation of
everything that we've been talking about here and will ever get to talk about again.
Wow.
We'll talk to you. Well,
From Iowa.
We're going to try to do a special episode from Iowa that might be janky in terms of editing.
It might be a little...
and sound quality, but it will be fine.
Yeah.
And it will also be fun because we'll have lots of updates.
That's
and
right.
You should expect it probably more like Tuesday.
Yeah.
Because we're going to try to do it after the caucuses,
right,
unless something exciting happens before that. But we will talk to you next week.
Bye.